You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
This is the Read to Lead podcast, episode 504.
And the moment you start to see change happening for you, you are already looking for the benefits. You're looking for how this is going to work out for you, things you can learn from the change. So it completely changes your mindset, which completely changes your outcome.
Your company is changing whether you like it or not. As a manager, you're expected to make that transformation happen, yet you feel voiceless, unseen, and unrepresented. But change is not the enemy. It's inevitable, and it could be the key to your success. Hi, I'm Jeff, and this is the Read to Lead podcast, the podcast dedicated to your personal and professional growth, for I believe that if you want to achieve true success in business and in life, that intentional and consistent reading is a must. This week, we welcome yet another successful and inspiring author to chat about their latest book and their insights on a number of topics. That author today is Pam Marmon, with a book called Speak Up or Stay Stuck. Get your voice heard when fast and focused change happens in the workplace. I'll be asking Pam to share about why it's important for us to think of change as happening for us rather than to us. I'll ask her about the need to grieve with regard to change and what it looks like in this context. Advice for you if you've found yourself in a situation where you weren't consulted or listened to before a major change was implemented, and a lot more. If you haven't yet joined us over at the Read to Lead community online, what are you waiting for? A Read to Lead Plus membership is just $9 a month and brings with it multiple opportunities for you and I and others to meet together to learn from me and other guest experts, enjoy business book summaries each week, the chance to network with those in the community, and get access to content I publish on a regular basis that's not found anywhere else but inside the community. To find out more about it, you just go to jeffbrown.me. And right now, you can sign up for a free 2-week trial to see if it's all you hoped it would be. And then after that, it's just $9 a month. Again, jeffbrown.me to find out more. Pam Marmon is the CEO of Marmon Consulting, a change management consulting firm that provides strategy and execution services to help companies transform. From executives at Fortune 100s to influencers at all levels, Pam helps leaders achieve lasting organizational change with, and this is important, minimal disruption. Pam is the best-selling author of a book we interviewed her about way back in May of 2020 called No One's Listening and It's Your Fault, a book that equips leaders to get their message heard during organizational transformations. Her new book is called Speak Up or Stay Stuck. Get your voice heard when fast and forced change happens in the workplace. Well, Pam, it is a thrill to have you back. I was checking this morning and realized it's been over 3 years since you were here before, back at the start of that thing we call the pandemic in May of 2020. It's been too long. Thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Jeff. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you today.
And I know I let you know this via email, but I want to say it publicly. I really appreciated receiving a copy of your book, number one, and then all the little gifts and trinkets I got along with it, which is a nice surprise. And one of those was a card, a personal card. Do you mind if I share a sentence from that card?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
You said, I hope you enjoy my message to managers who feel like change is happening to them. Mm-hmm. And then I read that sentence again, who feel like change is happening to them. And this is kind of at the crux of your book. I want to start by having you address why it's so important for us to think of change as not happening to us, but happening for us.
That's right. Absolutely. So I should start by saying that this book, Speak Up or Stay Stuck, is actually a sequel to the first book I wrote, which is called No One's Listening and It's Your Fault. So the first book was for senior leaders who are doing change in their organization, and they felt like no one's listening. So I wanted to tell them why nobody is listening. And as I started to work with these executive leaders over the last decade, I realized that there's a reason why people are not listening. It's because they feel like change is happening to them and they're out of control. They don't have input in terms of the outcome of how change is rolled out. And so I wanted to help the next level of people that are really critical in successful organizational change, and that's the managers, the employees, the managers, the people who actually make the change happen. And I heard their cries and I heard their stories and I sat with them and I held their hand and wiped their tears as I listened to them as a consultant, a neutral part, you know, neutral person outside of the organization. And I realized that there's a very pivotal mindset that would help them. And that mindset is, rather than feeling like you're a victim, that you feel like you're more in control. Now, you can't control everything, and that's life. You can control how you perceive the change, how you respond to the change, how you engage with the change. Those are things that are within your control. And the moment you start to see change happening for you, you are already looking for the benefits. You're looking for how this is going to work out for you, things you can learn from the change. So it completely changes your mindset, which completely changes your outcome. That's why I wrote it, to help the people who feel like they're in the heart of the change.
Well, Pam lays out the book in a very simple fashion, but I don't think at the same time I've ever seen anybody lay out a book quite so logically. It's the past, the present, and the future. And when I first saw that, I thought, okay, why the past? And it's because we have so much baggage related to organizational change that we've got to deal with that first, right? One of the steps, and I think it's one that will surprise a lot of people, and that's this need to grieve. And I want to know what that's about and what it looks like in this context specifically.
So from a logical perspective, it did feel like the past, the present, and the future made a lot of sense. And the reason why I started with the past is because in all of the conversations I've had with employees and managers and people in general was that everybody had a story about past change that failed. Everybody did, whether it was a bad leader that they engaged with, whether the process wasn't thought out well, it wasn't rolled out, it wasn't communicated. Everybody carried a piece of this heaviness with them into the future change that we were rolling out. And so I wanted to help people process that so that they don't have to bring it into the next phase of their lives, but they can leave it behind and really deal with it. Part of the grieving process is forgiving your leaders. But part of it is also forgiving yourself. And I wanted to include that because I think it's really important. We all have said things that we regret, acted in ways that were not probably optimal. And so being able to forgive others and forgive yourself is critical. And in the book, I give some examples of how you can do that. But to me, that was the starting point, that we start in the past and we deal with that before we can move into the future.
Just about any time we hear of an impending change, I think many of us we're triggered. We have a negative reaction. And I think part of that too goes back to this conversation about the past. I can remember sitting down with an HR director when my boss had left and they came from corporate and they wanted to kind of interview everybody and hear from us as to what's working, what isn't working. And I was very transparent, honest, and open in the midst of this change. And 9-10 months later, I was out of job. And so when I look at that years later, that sort of makes me think, well, maybe I shouldn't be, you know, if I were in a job, a regular job today, maybe I shouldn't be as transparent and open and honest. What are some methods you can recommend for helping us overcome the fear and anxiety that often comes along with this process, whether it's the result of a situation like I just described or something else?
Yeah. So I think, first of all, we have to acknowledge that what you experienced is real. And there is a fear of retaliation. And it's an absolute, you know, it must be considered when we engage with change. The beauty of the work that I do as a neutral consultant coming into an organization, I have the ability to both listen to employees and listen to senior leaders. And I have zero power to fire anybody, which is always something that employees are concerned about. So I have to tell them upfront, I am not here to fire you. And also the conversations that I have with employees are confidential. And so knowing who you're sharing that information with is really critical, because my goal to help change happen in an organization is really to help both senior leaders and frontline employees get what they need in order to move forward. And oftentimes there's a miscommunication. It's not that they want different things. It's that they don't know how to communicate and get to that same place. So some of the limiting beliefs that I have realized over the years that people have are around fear. My leaders don't care about me. So that's a legitimate fear that people have. There's a concern for worry, similar to what you shared. If I speak up, I will lose my job. That certainly has happened and can happen, especially if people are in toxic cultures. So knowing your culture, knowing who you're speaking with really matters. Knowing whether the conversation is confidential or if it's not confidential, because I think that'll also determine what you say and what you don't say. Another one is this limited experience. I don't have much to add. Maybe you're early in your career or brand new to the organization. Resignation, if I speak up, it won't make a difference. Right. So that's a legitimate concern that people have. Also blame. My senior leaders don't know how their decisions impact me. I hear that so often. And to a degree, that's probably true because they're not going to know every detail of everything that that you do, but it is your responsibility as a leader or manager to be able to escalate that if there's some concern. Another one of mine that's quite interesting is entitlement. I was not consulted about the decision. So in many ways, we feel like we must be consulted about every organizational change, and that's not how the world works. Right. Not efficient. It's not our responsibility to always have an input. Now we can have a seat at the table or a representation, but not necessarily us directly. And then the last one, number seven, I would share is regret. If I didn't speak up before, is it even worth it for me to speak up now? So let's say you're halfway through an organizational change and the leaders continue to give you opportunities to speak up, but you don't. And so there's this notion of regret as well.
Let's talk about advice you would give to someone who's in a situation where organizational change has happened. It's in the past. This is similar to the grieving question, but maybe the next step beyond that. They weren't consulted. They weren't listened to before that change was implemented. With regards to moving forward and continuing on, what advice would you give someone who's at that point? They can't go back and change things.
Really, the essence of this question goes back to trust. Do I trust the leaders who are making the decision? Do I trust the strategy that's been put in place for this change to be successful? And then do I trust the execution to actually take place as it's been planned out? And my advice would be to get involved, because that is the most direct path for you to actually have influence over the outcome. And so if the change is something that you're passionate about and you're not on the project team, you're not one of the influencers who is kind of guiding and directing the leadership team, you're not part of the communication team, find a way that you can get involved in whatever capacity you're able to, so that you are kind of at the front seat rather than feeling like change is happening to you and it's always in the past.
And that advice, I assume, would be similar if you're in the midst of the change right now, your organization's going through a large scale change. The idea is to have the healthiest outlook you can possibly have, right? I would assume.
Yes, absolutely. We do carry our past. This is why I started the book with addressing our past, because inevitably there are parts of our past that will seep into our future and how we react and respond to change. And so if we take the time to reflect, why did this not work? What did I learn from it? What do we as an organization learn from the past that we can change in the future?
You talked early on about the importance of employee support and how the first book was about leaders being heard. This book turns to managers and frontline employees and those folks getting heard. Leaders have to have their support, or otherwise they're going to have a tough time at successful change implementation, as you argue. Talk about why employee influence, though, is so important, and why or how we can use that influence then to support progress. How specifically do we use our influence?
Absolutely. So every organization has a set of influencers, and sometimes they're clearly labeled as such, and other times they're not. But influence is power, and influence is leadership. And so for any successful change initiative that happens in an organization, the influencers have to be on board. And if they're not on board, the change will go nowhere. And so smart, clever leaders understand that, and they know how to harness the power of the influencer so that they bring the entire organization along. Typically, in the most practical way we see this, we would put together an influencer group. We call them either change agents or just sometimes even focus groups. I have organizations where the leaders do not want to label anybody as a change leader. And so we'll just call it a focus group. And Throughout the duration of the project, we are consistently introducing new information and we're also listening. So those are sessions where the employees, the influencers come to us and tell us, this is working. This is not working. This is what people need to hear from. This is what people don't need to hear. And so throughout the entire duration of the process, we're tweaking and adjusting the change strategy and the change planning and how it's executed so that it's never out of sync with the employees. Mm. Never want to get to the end of a project and realize we completely missed everybody. Nobody's here with us. And inevitably, that's going to cause the project to fail. But the influencers play a key role and leaders know that. And I hope that employees understand that too, because there's so much power in being an influencer within an organization, whether or not you have a title. That the title is irrelevant. Your influence is people trust you. People see you as a reliable individual. People come to you for information. People follow you. And that is gold in any organization.
And at the end of the day, Pam, isn't it really about striking a balance between helping leaders with useful data and feedback, but at the same time, helping managers, frontline employees feel safe about doing it?
Absolutely. And it is the role of the executive leaders to be able to prepare managers for the change. Mm. And so an organization that does change really well will have specific individual activities for managers to be able to walk them through the process. Senior leaders know that they should not be the ones speaking all the time, sharing. There's a place for that, but they're not the only person who should do that. And so when you're able to support the right individuals at the right time with the content that they need, the training that they need, the communications that they need, the information flows so much more smoothly throughout the organization. And you address resistance with much greater ease than if you wait until the end.
Well, we spent most of our time to this point talking about part one and part two, the past and the present. I want to step into the future now for a moment, if we can. Unpack this concept in the book you talk about, Pam, called change resilience. What is that?
Yes. So when I first started writing the book, my preconceived notion was that resilience was going to be about the person. And the more research I did, the more I realized I was wrong. It's not about the person. It is about the organization and the culture, because true change resilience is within a healthy organization where people feel like, one, they're safe and that they belong. So safety and, you know, that psychological safety was really critical for any organization to be able to pivot quickly. Organizations where trust was low, there was no psychological safety, communication was broken. Those were the organizations that failed when change came fast and forced. But the organizations that survive much longer are the ones that are agile, there's trust, the teams are healthy, the communications are healthy. And so that change resilience for me became more about the culture than about the individual.
Mm. Well, you say it's not about the individual, but is there a path perhaps for, as individuals, expanding our change resilience personally?
Absolutely. So we all play a part in that. Every team is made up of individuals. And so the last chapter in the book, I talk about your personal resilience blueprint. And in the blueprint, I talk about the importance of being able to address several different categories. So the first one is your daily declaration. As an individual, when you wake up in the morning, what inspires you? What is the motivational message that you want to tell yourself daily to get you going? The second one is gratitude. What are you grateful for? And I make it a habit in the morning and then in the evening to think about the things I'm grateful for. Not only that, I actually started to teach my children at the end of the day to tell me, what are you grateful for? Because I want to condition them to be looking for things throughout the day that they're grateful for. The next one is your mindset. How do you want to think of yourself and others? Because that's going to determine the outcomes you get. So constantly be revisiting, what is my mindset about my work, my identity, my contributions to the world? The next one is your guiding principles, which essentially are your values. What standards do you want to live by? And then we have your habits. What are your daily rituals? What are the things that you do on a daily basis that are going to propel you forward and build your resilience? And that is coupled with your goals. So what are the goals, the things you want to accomplish in the next year, three to 5 years? And then the last two, wisdom, I think you're going to appreciate this one because it comes down to, what do you want to learn? So We read books because we're constantly wanting to learn new things. So what is the wisdom that you need in your life that you're seeking out? And the last one is vision. Who do you want to become? And I think that's really critical for each one of us as we're building and growing our resilience, to be able to identify who is that future me that I'm aspiring to live up to, so that every day, the things that I do, the way I engage with people, my attitude, they're all geared towards that vision.
I love that. And another thing I loved about the book, I mentioned liking how you've laid it out, past, present, and future. I also was pleasantly surprised to find a section at the end called Chapter Takeaways, because as a reader and someone who will likely come back to this later, you made it easier for me to sort of use this as a resource. And so I appreciate that. It's important not to skip to the end, but read the book, but know that in the future, you can come to the chapter takeaways and remind yourself, oh, yes, that's what it was I wanted to dive more into. So thank you for doing that. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. That. And Jeff, that was actually very intentional. As I was starting to write the book, I wanted to think about the reader. What do I want the reader to feel? What do I want them to take away? How quickly do I want them to get through the material? What conversations did I want them to have with their teams? There's some discussion questions for the teams. That was very intentional for them to be able to glean the most out of the book and apply it immediately. And I think the takeaways are just an example of that. The Resilience Blueprint, there's actually a PDF available for free on my website if anybody is interested in downloading that. Quick, simple things that we can apply immediately to get the results that we want.
And give us that web address if you don't mind.
Absolutely. MarmonConsulting.com, M-A-R-M-O-N, consulting.com. And then you can find it under Speak Up or Stay Stuck.
I usually ask this next question, type of question, at the start of a conversation, but I'm throwing a curve here at you today. Maybe you've heard me do this in the past, maybe not. But I want you to just share with me a little bit about your mom and dad, the two people you dedicated this book to.
Oh, that touches me so deeply because I dedicated the book to them. I see them as the most resilient people that I know. We immigrated to America when I was 12. And so for them to come to a brand new country without speaking the language, knowing the culture, really being brave is an example of resilience. And so I wanted to dedicate a book to them because they've overcome so much and they have modeled that for me. And what a blessing that is for me to have that kind of a model so that I can also model that to my own children someday. So thank you for asking that.
I love that. That's just so cool. Well, Pam, what haven't I asked you about the book? Is there anything I've not asked you that you want to make sure you have the chance to get across or let us know?
Yes. Yeah, so probably the biggest takeaway for me is that I want our listeners here to know that your ability to change and adapt to your environment holds the key to your personal and professional success. Don't fight it, invite it.
I love that. I love that. Don't fight it, invite it. Well, let me ask you a question about books. I didn't do it this morning, so shame on me, but usually when I sit down with a guest for the second or third or fourth time and I ask them to recommend books, I go back to the last interview and require them to mention books they did not mention last time so they don't repeat any. I don't remember what books you mentioned last time. I didn't think to check that today. But when you think about maybe over the last 3 years, let's put it that way, the books you've read, maybe they've impacted you in some way, what would those books be?
So I wanted to highlight two books that I used as part of my research when I was writing my book. Okay. And they're both on feelings. And I think they're very important because change and emotions usually come together hand in hand. The first one is called Big Feelings and the second one is called No Hard Feelings. Same authors, Liz Fosslane and Molly West Duffy wrote both. They're fantastic books. I highly recommend them. I have learned over the years that we don't want to dismiss our feelings. We want acknowledge our feelings and learn how to manage our feelings. But unless we recognize our feelings and are capable of being able to process those emotions, I think that would really hold us back. So I'm a big proponent of feel your feelings and understand why they're there. They're there for a reason. So don't dismiss them, but also don't feel like you have to lead into every feeling, you know, with full gusto, but really understand why you're feeling them and if you need to take action or process that emotion.
I would love to know too, your process. It's sort of a how you wrote the book type question. But at the same time, it goes beyond that. You talked about the research that went into this. And I'm thinking a little bit more broadly than just book research, but what I'm getting at is think about the processes you use, mm-hmm. the tools you use, the strategies you use when you learn new things, mm-hmm. how you manage that information, basically personal knowledge management. What does that look like for you to make sure that when new things come into your brain that you're like, oh, I want to do something with that. I want to create with that. I want to massage that. What method do you use to make sure that that information doesn't get lost later?
That's such a great question. Information comes to me throughout the day. And so I have learned that the best way for me to capture that is on my phone. I have a notes app and I just capture it on the phone. And then the critical part is what I do with it. And so pretty much most of the things that I learn, I actually will put on LinkedIn in some form of, whether it's a little comment or a posting or an article. I try to make whatever I'm learning be applicable so that I can teach it. And you probably know that those who teach what they learn retain that information much longer. Mm-hmm. So I make it a habit to continue to share that knowledge with others.
Awesome answer. Well, the book, again, is called Speak Up or Stay Stuck. Get Your Voice Heard When Fast and Forced Change Happens in the Workplace. Her name is Pam. Pam, thank you so much for being here and sharing all that you learned doing the research for this fantastic book. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeff. It was a pleasure.
During the course of this conversation, I was reminded that Pam and I live about 30 minutes from one another. We've not yet gotten together for coffee over the years, but we need to change that soon. She's a lot of fun to talk to. Hope you agree. Her book, again, is available now, and I hope you'll check it out. There's a link to it and the other resources and books she mentioned at readtoleadpodcast.com/504 for episode 504. I hope you'll consider my invitation, too, to check out the Read to Lead community online via a Read to Lead Plus membership, 2 weeks free, so you can try it out. Available to you right now when you go to jeffbrown.me. In fact, if you join now, you'll be able to attend our book club session on December the 14th with Steve Chu to talk about his book, The Family First Entrepreneur. One more time, that's jeffbrown.me. Well, that's going to do it for this week. Hope to see you next time when we actually will feature that same author, Steve Chu. Until then, as always, remember, leaders read and readers lead.